Thank you for joining us today for Volume 3 of our artist interview series, Articulations. This program is a collaboration between the Margaret Sauce Center for Women and Gender Equity and KHOI 89.1 FM. My name is Nancy Gebhardt, and we are thrilled to introduce you to four amazing artists in our community from whom you'll hear every Monday at 4 p.m. during the month of March. This is the second interview in this volume of the series, and I'm excited to be speaking with Sasha Phillips. Sasha is a disabled queer artist living in Iowa. They were trained in traditional art mediums under painter Dixie Schwisher and continued to pursue art on their own over the next 20 years. Currently focusing on the mediums of oil, ink, and graphite, they prefer a surrealist approach to art, exploring how nature, the macabre, and the fantastic can tell stories about the human experiences of grief, joy, and reinvention. Welcome, Sasha.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy to have you here. I really have admired your work. I think I first was introduced to you maybe about a year ago this time, and have really loved following your work, so I'm really excited to talk more with you today.
Thank you very much.
So I think one thing I find really interesting is your approach to the different art mediums that you use. And so you had training in art as a young person,
yes.
But then have largely pursued your art as a self-taught artist.
Yes.
Right? So through this learning in art, I'm wondering what it is that draws you to the traditional visual art mediums that you use, like oil and ink.
A lot of it has to do with familiarity. It's what I was initially trained in, so it's what I'm most comfortable using on a consistent basis. But more recently, it's been a matter of traditional art mediums tend to have a reputation, especially in classical art, of having this prestige, of having this value that digital art still is kind of breaking into in the modern day with new technologies. I'm drawn specifically to continuing to use traditional mediums because I feel that those mediums pair really well with my own approach to my subject matter, which is very surrealist. It's very a combination of realism and the absurd and the strange. Mm-hmm. And when you have a traditional medium that you're expressing something so odd I think it challenges the viewer to readdress their own understanding of what traditional mediums can do and look like.
Sure. I love that. And just the way, and I do think that that comes through in everything I've seen you make is this combination of, it's not just about the mediums that you're using, but the subject matter.
Yes.
That you're combining together.
Very much so.
Have you always been a practicing artist?
There was a space and time right after I graduated high school where I did not paint or draw for, I would say, about 8 years. Mm-hmm. It was more of just giving myself space from my initial experience with art, which was very structured. It was very high pressure, and that wasn't good for me as an artist. And I wasn't really able to maintain my enthusiasm when that was the whole basis for my art experience initially.
Sure.
So I took some space away from it. And then during the pandemic, I took it back up and I fell back in love with creating and fell back in love with the process of art.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you found a way back to it, right? And I do think the best artists have joy in the process, right?
Very much
and so if that was taken away because of expectations, just because of the approach, you know, that you originally kind of were working in or under. It's so wonderful, though, that you were able to find a way back to it.
I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah. Was there a reason, like during the pandemic, was there something about that particular time that you were like, now is the time to revisit this?
I think for a lot of people, it was similar in their own hobbies where I needed a way to handle and express my own frustration, my own grief, my own fear, and channel that into something. Mm-hmm. And I was working from home for almost 2 years. So I was isolated very much by myself almost the entire time.
Yeah.
And I needed an outlet. And I already had the tools. I had my art supplies. And I just made the decision one day that I needed this to go somewhere. My feelings were being bottled up. My own, you know, trepidation wasn't going anywhere. So I took out my art supplies and I started experimenting. I did have to retrain myself a lot in some of those mediums just because it had been so long.
Yeah.
But it brought me so much joy to voluntarily dive into those mediums and those artistic expressive measures that I hadn't had in so long.
Absolutely. And I think just what you're describing and having that time, having that space, right, to pick that back up again is really important. And in a previous conversation, one thing you said to me was that you were really drawn to the slowness of traditional medium. So what does that slowness provide to you as an artist?
A lot of it is meditative. Mm-hmm. I am neurodivergent, so my experience of slowing down is, it's very difficult for me to just slow down and process. And that's what my art does for me, is it forces me to slow down and to take each step at a time and to be patient with myself and with the art itself and just enjoy the process.
Sure.
Just take one piece at a time. And it also is a very good tool for me if I'm experiencing frustration or stress or anxiety in other areas of my life. I can take that and channel it into that process.
Yeah.
I can just sit and stare at my piece and say, what could be different? What do I want to change about this? What do I want to do next? And that entire process of self-evaluation and observation gives you a chance to step back away from your other problems and from your own life in some aspects and just channel that somewhere else.
Yeah, and kind of get absorbed in the art itself and then just the work and the act of making.
Zone out to music and put pretty colors.
I think that's something we all need to do sometimes. Well, through these traditional mediums, and then of course the surrealist style, which you've described a little bit, you certainly trouble the idea of beauty, right? And what is seen and articulated typically as beautiful.
Yes.
What draws you to the subject matter of gore and the macabre?
So a lot of it was an accident, honestly. I have some medical trauma that exposed me to gore at a very young age. And as a way to process that, I think I took a step back and evaluated my own approach to mortality and my own acceptance of my own mortality. And because of that and some outside influences, I accepted an approach to, how do I say this? My own approach to mortality is that we're all part of the cycle of life.
Yeah.
We're part of the natural occurrence of life and death and rebirth and decay. And my own struggle with my mortality made me reframe what that decay process looks like. And I saw the beauty in it. I saw that, you know, if you look at mushrooms and if you look at, you know, roadkill, or if you look at bones, they're very beautiful shapes. They're beautiful colors. They're sad, yes, but they're also an expression of the process of life. And I take that same approach with my art, is I enjoy combining elements of the macabre, where you're addressing your own mortality over and over again via art, and then incorporating the surrealist approach, where I add other elements of the fantastic. For example, I just finished a piece today that is a realistic heart, human heart, that incorporates vampire aesthetics. So it includes pearls, bite marks, and, you know, blood and gore.
Sure.
But it's just because something has those associations doesn't mean that it can't be beautiful.
Yeah. And I think it's also a nice reminder that sad is an okay emotion.
Very much so.
Right? Like, it's okay that we experience sadness or that we experience a range of emotions. And then I love the just twist in finding and seeing the beauty in it.
Yes.
So I appreciate you sharing more of your personal story, too, of how that kind of was an initial, at least, inspiration for what you're doing.
Yes.
So what is it that you think surrealism adds?
Surrealism adds a freedom that you don't really get if you stick to a realistic approach. There are, of course, other philosophies on art that you could take. I was most drawn to surrealism because of the freedom of imagination that it allows. There's an expressive nature to surrealism that takes away some of the logic. And that allows you to then bring in expressive elements that if someone's looking at it, they might not understand why they have a certain response to it emotionally. And then they try to address it logically and it just doesn't quite make sense.
Sure.
And I think that makes it more interesting. And I think it makes it prettier, honestly.
Yeah. Well, and I just think it opens it to such a wide range of interpretations,
yes,
too. Where maybe if it was, you know, like the piece you were just describing, if it was just kind of a realistic biological representation of a human heart, there might not be that really good struggle that a viewer has with art, right?
Yes.
Of like thinking like, what does this mean and why am I responding this way?
Yes.
Yeah. So I really like that because I think for me as someone who is primarily an appreciator of art, I really like those things where I can go back to them. And especially I think with surrealism, so dependent on your mood that day.
Yes, right? Very much so.
It's like whatever I'm dealing with in other spaces comes to my interpretation and understanding of surrealism. You see different things, you know, so, and I think that that just creates such an interesting thing for a viewer.
Yes. And I think it also gives the opportunity for the viewer to take their own experience and reflect it back. You can do that with almost all of art, but because of the subject matter I tend to gravitate towards, which is addressing systemic trauma or individual trauma or grief or rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one of my pieces that I put on display was about manufactured scarcity and food insecurity. Somebody who doesn't have experiences with food insecurity might look at that painting of a petri dish and have just enough connection to it where they're like, I know what that's like. I know what it's like to have food that's spoiled. I know what it's like to have food that's moldy. And then somebody who doesn't have those experiences might look at that and be confronted with, oh, this exists. This is something that people experience. This is something that is both systemic and individual,
mm-hmm,
and maybe prompt somebody to look more into it or to make changes.
Yeah, I love that. One thing you said in an earlier conversation too that really stuck out to me was that you seek to use your art to disturb the comfortable and comfort the disturbed. Can you share more about where this purpose comes from?
Yes. So that is part of a quote from Cesar A. Cruz, who is a Mexican poet and human rights activist. I really latched on to that concept, mostly because my community approaches what's pretty and what is artistic and beautiful and camp,
mm-hmm,
very different from maybe the general population. Speaking specifically of the queer community, our ideas of beauty and glitter and glitz and glam and brightness and elegance are very different to the general population. Some things that the general population find ugly,
mm-hmm,
or like very bold makeup or very huge dresses that are, you know, 10 feet wide or
yes,
whatever.
Like very loud,
big,
right?
Wigs, think, yeah, and just fantastic expressions of gender are looked at as ugly or should not be seen or other. And I apply that to my own experience of art, and I relate that to my own experience of art because the things that other people might find off-putting, I know that there's capability of beauty there.
Yeah.
And I try to peel back those layers and then address my own preconceived notions and my own prejudices and then try to face what's underneath.
Yeah.
And that very much applies to my own community, the disabled community as well. If you're familiar with the ugly laws, there was a point in time where we were not supposed to be seen in public. There were laws against it. And I take those same preconceived notions of society that I, as a disabled person, should not be viewed, should not be seen, should not be heard. And I try to peel those back for myself and allow myself to be seen and allow myself to be heard, not just as, you know, my own gender expression or my own makeup or whatever, but also through my art.
Yeah.
And I hope that other people in those communities and others see themselves in that same vision.
Yeah, I really appreciate all of that. And it actually connects really well to something else that I've noticed and really admired about your work is how you use social media. I am someone who is usually pretty distant. I try to keep a lot of distance from social media. And so when I find someone who I feel like really accesses the positive and good values of social media in really meaningful ways, I'm always just massively impressed. And so you're one of those people.
Thank you.
For me. And part of it is because I think of what you're saying is that your social media presence, or what I follow anyway, is mostly related to your art, but it also definitely connects to this idea that you're talking about of visibility of these different identities, life experiences that you've had, and the vulnerability with which you share them publicly in the social media space. I am very impressed by.
Thank you.
And just the amount that you share, and the ways that you care for yourself and your body also, and sharing about that, I think is really important. Can you talk a little bit about your approach to social media and what it adds to your art practice?
So it's definitely multifaceted. My approach going into social media is I educated myself first. I am a cusper, so I'm Gen Z, millennial, on the cusp. And my experience of social media exposure was mainly YouTube. Initially, YouTube, Twitter, some Tumblr. So those initial interactions online, you're exposed to things like apology videos and I'm burnt out videos, I'm taking a break, I'm quitting. When you're already aware that that's going to be a possibility for you going into it, regardless of how big or small your following is, I already knew going into it, I wanted to set boundaries for myself so that when I knew that came up, I'd already set expectations with myself and with my audience and followers that they wouldn't be surprised by it, and they would also hopefully welcome their own humanity.
Yeah.
And understand that I'm a human, I'm not a commodity. I may be part of a brand, as in my own artistic brand, but the human behind all of that needs rest, needs sleep, gets sick, you know, needs a break, gets art block.
Yeah.
And all of those things are not a detriment to your social media presence, in my experience. If you tell someone, hey, I'm having a migraine, which this happened last week, I'm having a migraine, I can't create right now, that's okay. I'm taking care of myself. I hope you're doing the same.
Yeah.
And that allows for a vulnerability with the viewer, the follower, that is often reciprocated. Yeah. I've had some excellent conversations with other artists and with my followers about just taking a break or, you know, collaborating on art pieces. So a lot of it's setting boundaries for myself, respecting my own boundaries, and then taking the time to engage with people who are positive and who enjoy the same things that I do, or maybe not in the same way, but enjoy art.
Yeah. I love boundaries, right? I think that's always a good lesson. And it was funny because as you were talking about yourself as a cusper, I'm a cusper, but of a Gen X millennial cusper, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm thinking my first social media interactions were MySpace. And and then, you know, and it wasn't, you know, I was several years out of college when Facebook became a thing. And so for me, what I never understood how to do was to use social media as a space for the whole person.
Yes.
Right? Like it was just about a very specific, you know, it had very specific and what to me felt really disingenuous because of that, because of kind of separating your social media persona from your person.
Yes.
Right? And so I really love hearing your perspective because it does make me rethink just the value of social media and how you can still use that space to still be and communicate as a whole person.
Yes, right? you can still be vulnerable about yourself as a human and protect your own privacy and your own day-to-day boundaries. Not everybody needs to express everything about themselves online if they don't choose to.
Yeah.
But for me, because my own vulnerability is so much a part of my art practice, I couldn't divorce the two.
Sure.
And still provide my art in a way that makes sense for the context of myself as the artist.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. And how that particular situation might not apply to another artist, right? If their subject matter wasn't so integrated.
Yeah. For sure.
So are there specific social media sites that you use for certain things? Or how do you figure out kind of where to put your social media energy?
So I'm still learning for sure. I've only been on Instagram initially for I think 2 years now. And I created a TikTok about a year ago, but I haven't actually started using it regularly until I want to say 6 months ago. I primarily use Instagram and TikTok as well as in-person interaction. Instagram, it's much more focused on documenting the process for my art creations, for advertising my work, and for engaging with artists directly and my community directly. So it's much more about interacting in comments, DMs, posting more personal stuff on stories. It's a lot more holistic. Whereas with TikTok, that's primarily a way for me to present my work to a much broader audience and to engage in a different way. So instead of in comments or DMs, I might do more voiceovers, I might do more poems, poetry, reading, things like that, where you're providing a presentation versus Instagram, where it's much more interaction based. And TikTok is much more, at least for me, it's much more, this is what I'm working on, these are the things that the thoughts that I have around it, and then hopefully engaging people from there.
Yeah. And is it so at the same time, I'm assuming, especially with something like TikTok, as a consumer at the same time, right, as someone who's producing content, there's a little bit of an educational value to being in those spaces as well.
100%. For Instagram, a lot of that education comes from person-to-person interactions with other artists, as well as information they might provide via reels and posts. For TikTok, because it allows for longer form content, I found that it is almost more educational when it comes to medium work or techniques or introducing myself to new forms of art. And you don't quite get the same experience. With TikTok, you can try to engage with the artist more so, but it is definitely a lot more difficult. I do think the educational factor is very much there, though.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to get on TikTok.
I recommend it. I recommend it.
So you have described yourself as a perfectionist too.
Yes.
I'm just curious, how does knowing that about yourself interact with the vulnerability that's required to make art and share it with the world?
It's definitely a process that has to be addressed again and again. It's not something that I found a fix for
Sure.
necessarily. That process for me looks like addressing my own fear every time I start to notice myself procrastinating or making decisions that are so impulsive, and I look back and I'm like, why did I do that? I put too much pressure on myself to make the piece perfect, quote unquote. When I encounter those feelings and I try to take a step back and I'm like, okay, you're making decisions based on fear. And though that can create beautiful art, that isn't what I want to do. I
Okay.
want to push past the fear and try to allow myself to more freely express through other emotions. And I'll then take a step back. I might change mediums if I need a break. I might just take a break completely. I might reach out to other artists to ask their opinions and get their thoughts. But a lot of it is more just taking a breath and evaluating, I am making this decision out of fear. If I wasn't afraid, what would I do? And then going from there.
Yeah.
And I just have to keep doing it and keep doing it. The
Yeah.
perfectionism doesn't go away, but knowing I have it and knowing that there's ways to address it lets me more freely express myself.
Yeah.
And that's pretty critical for my work.
I would imagine so, and just I think for me, I see it as critical for creating and sharing art in general, right? Because it's such a vulnerable thing to do, to make something, especially I think with what you're doing, and it has very direct connections to your lived experience, to a number of different things. And so the art is personal in and of itself, right? And so that's one thing I've always admired about artists is that vulnerability to say, hey, I created this and I was thinking about this, and to me, this is important and I want you to see it, right? And I want you to interact with it and interpret it and feel something from it, learn from it.
Especially as artists on social media, perfection is always a battle because you look at other people's feeds and the cinematography is gorgeous. The shots are perfectly well lit and edited. the post is well framed and is beautiful and somebody ran it through Grammarly. And there's so much work that goes into that, but especially if you're a smaller artist like myself, I don't have time and I don't see the value in this perfected, minute image of myself, because like I said, that doesn't fit my art.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit who I am. But I have to constantly address those same expectations with myself and just accept myself. Not everybody's going to like my work.
Mm-hmm.
I am perfectly okay with that. I understand that. Sometimes I look at it and I'm like, that's weird. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But those who enjoy my art, they enjoy it and hopefully find some value from it.
Yeah, I think you've, for me, highlighted it and also gone back to like a complication of social media, mm-hmm. right? Is that it can be perceived as this kind of like quote unquote democratic space where everyone has access to it.
Yes.
But the things that you have access to creating content are not equal, you know, among people who are especially, thinking about artists, of the equipment you have to record your videos and, post photos. But then, like you're saying, the time, right? The time it takes, because you're also having to develop additional creative skills.
Yes. I had to learn video editing.
Right?
It's something I'm still working on. I do enjoy it, which is probably a good thing considering how much of it I do. But it was definitely a skill that I did not have before.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's something I just think is a really interesting thing about that space too. And again, related to this idea of perfectionism, and then adding that social media layer too of comparison, right? Across things that can happen. So you mentioned a little bit earlier, you mentioned having art block occasionally,
yes.
right? How do you move through that?
Oh boy. Sometimes I don't even realize it's happening. And I think that's actually the trickiest step, is realizing that it's happening. For me, because I have a scheduled posting schedule and a scheduled art agenda, usually, if I start to have longer and longer spaces between that, that's usually when I can tell I'm either getting art block or I'm already there.
Mm.
Usually what I do to address it is step back and take a break. That's not always recommended. For me, taking a break doesn't look like cutting myself off completely from art.
Mm.
It means trying to find inspiration and expression other places. So if I'm working on one piece and I've got art block for that one piece, that doesn't mean I can't work on my pencil techniques or shading or lighting mm-hmm. or learning a new editing skill. If I shift my focus to other things that still hopefully improve and address my art, that isn't a bad thing. It just means I might not get that piece done right now.
Yeah.
So shifting the focus is a major tool that I use. Another is, like I said, getting input from other artists. There was a piece I worked on a couple of months ago, and I had it almost, I want to say, a quarter of the way done, and I absolutely hated it, and I didn't want to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So I called up a friend, an art friend of mine, and I asked her, I'm like, this is what I'm trying to accomplish. I hate it.
Yeah.
I absolutely hate it. What do you recommend? And she said, sometimes you just have to start over. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
I smothered it in gesso, and I started over.
Yeah.
And I love the piece that I have today. So sometimes you just have to make the hard decisions and start over because it's just not working.
Yeah. That was nice. Sometimes it's nice to have that permission too, to come from like a trusted colleague, fellow artist, someone who understands what you're experiencing.
If this doesn't work, I blame you.
Well, not even that, right? But it's probably something that you had thought, and you just...
It was.
Yes, and you just hadn't given yourself permission to really accept that thought. And so for me, I think that's a really important thing as well, is just to have those trusted people that you can go to to say, hey, I really need your critical feedback on what I'm doing. And you know that they'll give it.
Yes.
Yeah. Because in everything, I think all of whatever we're working on can get better from having those meaningful connections and relationships, which I think is really great. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the projects you're working on now?
So I finished a project this morning. I'm very, very happy with it. And that is my vampire-themed anatomical heart.
Yeah.
In a surrealist style. I just finished it this morning. The paint's still drying. Once that's dried and finished, I plan to sell prints of it. Once I have that available, it'll be available via the links on my social media on TikTok and Instagram. And in addition to that, I'm also working on my art portfolio, which is ink and specifically painting ink and pen focused. That's going to be quite a huge project. I don't know if I'm going to get it done by the end of the year, but that's involved a lot of tattoo-esque style art pieces. And I'm trying to really narrow down object and subject focused art pieces. So smaller things, mm-hmm. things that are much more focused on just general storytelling and concepts. So
yeah,
when I say tattoo-esque, I mean that it looks like flash pieces.
Yeah, well, that's very cool. And I think especially taking some of the oil paintings I've seen of yours, and I can imagine converting some of the same ideas into more like graphic looking,
yes.
right? Drawings and shapes.
I'm very much trying to improve my understanding and my skill in shape and lighting. So when you're working in black and white, you really have to be aware of and careful of your shapes. Because if you don't have the lighting quite right, if you don't have that shading quite right, it'll look strange, the focus will be off, and it won't convey the narrative you're looking for.
Yeah, that's really good. Really good advice. So you mentioned that the prints will be available on your social media. And,
yes.
Well, once the paint is dry. Because it's
yes,
oil,
once
I'm
the paint
assuming,
is dry.
Right? Right?
Yes, because yeah. then I'll have to photograph it and scan
yes.
it and all of that.
Yeah, but can you share, if people want to connect with you in your work, share what your social media sites are or where they can go to find more information about what you're doing?
Absolutely. So my Instagram and TikTok handles are Sasha Blue. That's BLU _ art on both platforms. And then for any business inquiries, my email is sasha@sashablu.art.com.
Perfect. Sasha, thank you so much for spending your time talking with us today and sharing all that you did. I really appreciate our conversation and learned a lot from you.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So thank you for listening to Articulations, brought to you by the Margaret Sloss Center for Women and Gender Equity and KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM. Our interview is edited by Rosie Rowe. Join us next week, Monday at 4 p.m., for a conversation with Joe Allen. To round out the hour, we invite you to sit back and enjoy a selection of songs picked by Sasha. You can find the full Articulations playlist on Spotify or on the Sloss Center website.